starting tonight the Hamigdav and Parshas Kisisa. Really what I want to go through tonight in the Hamigdav is sort of one extended explanation that he has on the whole Maisa with the Egel and with Aaron HaKohen. Particularly, you know, one of the things that's always very bothersome about the whole story with the Egel Azov is the role of Aaron and the Egel Azov. There's a fellow here in the neighborhood, I won't mention him on tape, but a very fine fellow. He's a real scholar of Chumash, and numerous times when we speak, and he says, you know, one of the things that's really consistently bothered him is the role of Aaron in the Maaseh HaEgel, and the way that Aaron seems to get off kind of scot-free, so to speak, throughout the story. I mean, here, after all, Aaron HaKohen seems to be the one who's really responsible for making the Egel. You know, the people go to him, he orchestrates the production of the Egel, and basically gets off with a reprimand. Okay, there's a Maimah Chazal that says that Nadav and Avihu in part died as a punishment for Aaron for the Maaseh HaEgel. But even so, I mean, even taking that into account, 3,000 Jews are killed, because of their participation and bowing down to the Egel. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost ready to remove the Jewish people as being his Am HaNivchar on account of the Chet HaEgel. Wouldn't you think that Aaron would get, you know, would be punished in some way that would be worse than just a slap on the wrist, which is essentially what he gets? So the Netziv develops a very interesting mahalach in understanding, first of all, the Chet HaEgel b'chlau, and secondly, the role that Aaron plays in the Chet HaEgel. And I think it's a fascinating interpretation of the story and the psukim. So really, I just want to sort of read through the psukim with the interpretation of the Netziv, and hopefully we'll come away from this evening with a very different understanding of the story we might have had previously. So, Perek Lamed Beis. Vayar ha'om kivo sheishmo shel eretz min ha'har. The people see that Moshe is delaying coming down from the mountain. So first of all, comments the Netziv, the usage of the word ha'om, the people, is very striking. Writes the Netziv, heim dalas ha'om ibnei Yisrael. Ha'om, the people, refers to the religious lower rung of the people. These people, from the time that they left Mitzrayim, never thought that they were worthy to be under the Ribbono Shel Olam's direct hashgacha, to get their parnasa directly from the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These people thought lowly of themselves. They never wanted to leave Mitzrayim. They couldn't fathom the idea that they would be the Am HaNivchar under the direct hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'rak Moshe v'Aaron hochichu b'chol ahemshech hazman es ha'amon v'lokchu levavim b'dvarim. Right? It was only Moshe and Aaron who were able to convince this Am, this people, right? These people who thought lowly of themselves that no, you can do it, you can come, you can be under Hashem's hashgacha, it will be okay. V'zeh ha'am chazru v'ha'aminu. So these people were convinced, ultimately, that God would watch over them, but they thought that they would only be watched over by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu. That Moshe Rabbeinu was the magic conduit to bring down this parnasa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the rest of the people. But if Moshe Rabbeinu were to pass away, but, you know, if Moshe Rabbeinu were to pass away, so then they'd be left to the elements. Right? And that, you know, for them to survive in a natural fashion, without the direct hashgach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, would require them going into Eretz Yisrael. They wouldn't be able to hack that in the Midbar. The Midbar is not a place which really lends itself to their being taken care of. Right, so it all starts with this this lower religious madrega within the Jewish people getting nervous because Moshe Rabbeinu is not coming back. If Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't come back, Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was enabling us to receive God's special hashkacha. If he's gone, what's going to be?
I think you're right in that too.
Yeah.
It's like you are all with Hashem.
Right. Oh, very good. Very, very good. In fact, does he bring that raya? Interesting. Let's just take a look. The Rabbi Rubin mentions the famous pasuk. Vayiru ha'am es Hashem. The people, the feared HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe Avdo. And then they had trust in God and His servant Moshe. That's interesting. So he doesn't make that comment on the pasuk, but he does refer back to Tes Zayin, Perek Tes Zayin, pasuk Gimel. Okay, so yeah, he doesn't make that comment on the pasuk by Amino Bashem Moshe Avdo, but I think he definitely read it in.
Water was given the foot of Miriam,
right.
And the man was given the foot of Moshe
Rabbeinu. Right.
So they were right in
their assumptions. Right. In other words, they were right up to a point. In other words, the three gifts that they get in the Midbar, you know, the Mon, the Anoni HaKavod, and the Be'er, really do come in the schos of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, respectively. So they're not totally off base over here. Right. So first, that's the Then they see that Moshe Rabbeinu is delayed coming down from the mountain. So again, we're all familiar with the famous Maamar Chazal that they knew he was going to be up there for 40 days. They miscalculated the 40 days. How did they, you know, that's how they came to this misunderstanding. The 6 hours that they were off, you know, led to this catastrophe. That it says, you know, on the level of Pashut Pshat, there's a much easier way to understand the people's angst. They didn't know that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be gone for 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the mountain. If you read the Poshet of Pshat in Chumash, there's no point at which Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, Rabbi Yisai, I'll be back in 40 days. So if somebody disappears into the Anon V'Arafel, right, this man of God who just brought down, you know, was just part of this, you know, incredible revelation at Har Sinai, and he disappears up into the clouds at Har Sinai, and 40 days, you know, a month and change goes by, and he hasn't come back. So you get nervous also, right, says the Netziv. He quotes this from the Ibn Ezra. Yofte kosav Rav Ibn Ezra. They didn't know that Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be there for 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm going up. They say, okay, you know, we'll prepare lunch for you. You know, we'll have supper ready for when you come back, right? They didn't say anything about 40 days. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu himself didn't know that he was going up for a period of 40 days. Al Kain. So it was a reasonable assumption. A man disappears for 40 days on top of a mountain. Why should we think that he's alive? Or, as the Netziv goes on to point out, either he died, or perhaps he became something larger than life. Continue reading the pasuk. Vayikoil ha'om alarim. This again, this lower stratum of the people, gathered together around Aaron, Vayomrei Lov, Kuma Seilonu Elohim, Asher Yelchu Lefonenu, rise up, make for us an Elohim. Now again, Elohim can mean God, but it could also just mean a force, as we find numerous times in Chumash. Dayanim are called Elohim. Please, rise up, make for us a force. Right, the Netziv, Eze Kolach, Shir Man Higenu, Menahagenu Bamidbar, Kederach Hateva, Kefi Kochenu. Moshe is gone. We need some other force to be a buffer between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be a conduit between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, much the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was, because he was the source of our Parnasa. Kizeh Moshe Ha'ish Asher Ha'elonu Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Lo Yodanu Me'hoyolo. Because we don't know what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning, says the Nitziv, he might have died. They don't say that he died. He might have died. He might have become a Malach, say the people. He might have become a Chanoch, who goes up, Vayishalei Chanoch eso Elokim ve'enenu, ki lokach oso Elokim. So there's a history of very righteous people kind of disappearing up into the Himmel. Right? So maybe that's what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu also. He's a holy man. God took him. Right? Lo yodanu mehoyolo. We don't know what happened to him. We're not saying that he's dead, but it's been 40 days. I mean, we were expecting him back by supper time. We figured, you know, we've been mechabed him with the Amud for Ma'ariv, and he's gone. Right? We don't know what happened to him over this time. And what are we going to do? But it's very clear that they don't want a God. Right? Kuma seilonu Elohim says that Nitziv means make us a replacement for Moshe Rabbeinu, not for the Ribbono Shel Olam Chalila. We just need an intermediary to bring down the Shefa, right? To bring down the Parnasa from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Moshe Rabbeinu is gone and he no longer can serve in that role.
So according to what I said before, that no one knew how many days that he was going to wait for, so why did they do it after the first 2 weeks? Why did they go bananas?
So the truth is, it really, you know, if you look at from the Ibn Ezra's point of view, the people come out looking very, very good. They waited 40 days before doing anything. Adarabba, you know, in other words, it really speaks to their credit. They were very patient. Right? The way Chazal portray it, as Rashi brings, that, you know, they were off by 6 hours and they got on Shvilkas, they're a bunch of very anxious yekkers. Yeah, he's late, you know, he's late, what's going to be? The way that Ibn Ezra portrays it, you know, so they were incredibly patient. You know, 40 days go by and Moshe Rabbeinu's gone. And they have no inkling of when he's going to come back. So, you know, mehechatesi. I mean, why should they think that he's coming back anytime soon? 40 days. I don't know that there's any particular significance, according to Ibn Ezra, at the number 40, but, you know, it's a nice round number. At what point does a person get on Shvilkas? Right? So they waited a month and change, and at a certain point they felt, you know, I guess he's not coming back. Right?
And Pasha Shmoy says, Hashem tells Moshe, you, Aaron should be prepared,
Right. So you'll be an Elohim, right? So in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is called Elohim by God,
right?
So in other words, the usage, the fact that Moshe is gone and now we need another Elohim, is not a crazy idea according to the Chumash itself. Vayomer Elohim Aaron. Okay, so Aaron says, okay, no problem. Parku nizme azov. So break off the golden rings, asher biozne neshechem b'neichem uvnoseichem, that are in the ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, v'hoviu eloi, and bring it to me. An immediate response: okay, Moshe Rabbeinu's gone, we need a replacement. Okay, go bring me your gold. Right? Aaron doesn't even seem to bat an eyelid. So here comes the Nitziv at length on Pasuk Beis, and he tries to explain to us where Aaron is coming from. And again, I think by the time we get through with this, we'll have a very different perspective on the Maaseh Ha'egel. Diei Kazov v'gambi Oznei Shechem v'o'inin Yevuah al-pimashu pirashu l'maylu chof yutes shebo azhara achar matantar v'aseres ha'dibros lo sasun iti Elohei Chesed v'Elohei Zov lo sasu lochem. Back in Parshas Yisra, right after the Torah was given, so the Torah comes and commands, Losasun iti Elohi Chesed Elohi Zav. Don't make any Elohim of gold or silver. Don't make any such things iti to serve together with me. What exactly was that Isser? Was that prohibition which the Ribbono Shel Olam told Klal Yisrael right after Matan Torah? Shelo Yasu Ezet Surah Shel Kesef She Noach Lifnei Hashem. Essentially, what God prohibited right after Matan Torah was not to make an Egel Azov. Don't make any image out of gold or silver which will serve as a conduit so that the people can turn to it and through it be able to express their tefillos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to get involved on their behalf. We have a hard time relating to the whole concept of Avodah Zarah. We can't really get our heads around it. You know, the Yitzhar for Avodah Zarah was taken away. But back in the day, you know, people really felt the need, that they felt that an invisible God was very difficult to relate to. So having an image, not of God, not to replace God, but having an image to help focus one's kavana, or to be able to see the parnasa or channeled through that image, was very important to people. So comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu right after Matan Torah and says, the fact that you shouldn't replace me with another God, that goes without saying. But lo sa'astun iti, don't make even together with me a power expressed through gold or silver that, you know, will help you channel your thoughts and will help you, from your perspective, believe that the parnasa is coming down through that intermediary. Right? Don't make anything that out of gold, out of silver, or the like. That's, you know, what the pasuk there is referring to is not real avodah zarah. And the aseret hadibros, the Jews were told very straight out, lo yi elocha Elohim acherim al ponoi, that you shouldn't have an avodah zarah. The shom hu b'taras mashkiach b'kocho. Avodah Zarah means that you believe that God has given power, has delegated power to some intermediary, and that we can turn to that intermediary and he has the power. Right? That's Avodah Zarah. That's not what the Pasuk Lo Sa'asun Iti is talking about. The Pasuk Lo Sa'asun Iti is saying, even if you're turning to God, you're not turning to this intermediary because you believe the intermediary has the power. You're turning to God Himself. Right? The Nesiv over here, I read a lot without a translation, I'm going to try to paraphrase. The Nesiv over here addresses a very, very important question which has halachic ramifications. Is it appropriate to ask Malachim, or any intermediary, to plead our case before God? In other words, to ask an intermediary to do stuff for us because we believe that intermediary has direct power, that's called Avodah Zarah. But what if we ask an intermediary, you know, go and put in a good word for us with the Ribbono Shel Olam? What if we ask an intermediary to intercede with us? So says the Nitziv, that's not Avodah Zarah, because we're not asking the intermediary for the request itself. We're asking the intermediary to talk to God. In other words, we're asking the underling, could you go ask the boss, you know, if he could help us out, right? And that's not—it's not even usher on any level. You can ask an intermediary, go and, you know, put in a good word for us with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ask him to help us. Now, this, of course, we know is a major debate in Achronim. Certainly, the most famous Maran Mokom on this issue is the Maral. The Maral writes that the Tefillah Machnisei Rachamim, which is customarily printed at the end of the Slichos, Machnisei Rachamim, Hachnisu Tfiloseinu L'Nefle Bala Rachamim, we turn to the Malachim and we say, Malachim, please, go and beseech on our behalf before the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Maral says, that's terrible. You can't say such a tefillah. The Rambam is very explicit that we can't daven to any other entity other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? So the Maral says they should strike that paragraph from the Slichos. Yeah.
Right.
So there clearly is a concept of asking intermediaries, like, you know, the deceased, to daven on our behalf. Perhaps the Maral would say, you know, there's a difference between someone who's deceased, where it's clear that you're not going to mistake that deceased person for a deity, whereas a malach is close enough to God, it's a spiritual entity, that you might, you know, come to confuse the malach with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. But in any case, the
Maral would have problems with the Rebbe.
Would not have problems with the Rebbe. In other words,
no,
any. I'm not sure. In other words, because there is a concept of asking a tzaddik to daven on one's behalf, which is mentioned by Chazal. There again, I think, you know, a human being versus a malach, you know, the human being is less apt to be confused with the Rebbe Shalom. I mean, Christianity notwithstanding. Right, but you know, the human being is in a category by himself. It's tzaddik can daven on your behalf, but to turn to malachim, that's already going too far. The Maral decries this tefillah of machnisei rachamim. The Nitziv basically is affirming it. Because the Nitziv is saying, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with it." I mean, in human terms, you could go to a lower-ranking official to ask him to put in a good word with you with a high-ranking official. So in celestial terms, you can go to a maluch to ask him to put in a good word with you, with the big man upstairs, right? With the boss, with the Rebbe Mishalala, right? So there's nothing wrong with that per se. What's wrong then, says the Nitziv? What's wrong is v'lo alakolze eino rak ela bakosha ba'alma v'lo lasos sura upeso sheyev kovua lekabo me'ashem v'litein lona. But to make an image of this intermediary. In other words, you want to daven, you know, and ask Michael HaMaloch to put in a good word with you with the Ribbono Shalom, that's fine. But if you want to make an image of Michael HaMaloch and daven to the image and say, Michael, would you please put in a good word with us with the Ribbono Shalom, that's problematic. But again, it's not Avodah Zarah, because you're not asking Michael himself to do something for you. You're not saying that Michael has the power to bestow goodness upon you. You're asking Michael as an intermediary, could he put in a good word with you, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's the ultimate repository of all of this power. Right? So just, again, to sum up what the Nitziv has just said, to turn to a foreign entity other than God and believe that that entity has the power to help us out exclusively, that's called Avodah Zarah. That was also based on the Aseres HaDibros. To turn to an entity that's non-tangible and to say, "Oh Malach, could you beseech the Ribbono Shalom to help us out?" That's actually mutter. The Nitziv disagrees with the Maral. He holds that Machnisei Rachamim is a beautiful tefillah, and the tune is also a beautiful tune. You know, you can sing it as much as you want, Gevaldik. To make an image of an intermediary and ask this image, would you intercede with us on behalf of the Ribbono Shalom, be an intermediary, an intercessor with us between the Ribbono Shalom and us? That wasn't prohibited at the Aseres HaDibros. That was prohibited by the pasuk Losasun Iti, which was told to Klal Yisrael after Matan Torah. You know, three different madregas. Yeah.
I'm a little confused. I mean, I know it was just mentioned before about going to the tzaddik. Some people they go to the tzaddik.
That's a big problem.
He says,
that's right. I mean, in other words, if a person goes to a cave and he davens to the tzaddik, that's...
A lot of people do that.
Yeah, okay, a lot of people are wrong. Yeah, it is wrong. But a lot of, you know, the fact that people do things that are wrong is not a new phenomenon. I mean, as we put it.
So how
are
you supposed to daven?
No, you're asking the you're asking the tzaddik, would he put in a good word for us? You know, would he be a good debater? Would he intercede with us? You know, appeal our case on behalf of us with the Ribbono Shel Olam? No, because the tzaddik doesn't have the power to grant the request. As the tzaddik, the only thing the tzaddik can do is he can appeal our case before Hashem. Ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be the one to decide whether it happens or it doesn't. Right? So that's exactly the point that Nitziv is making. You know, you can talk to other entities, live, dead, angelic or otherwise, you know, to get them to intercede on our behalf, but they ultimately are not the source of the granting of the request.
What about the fact that you're asking the tzaddik to beg the Rabbanu Shlomo, and the tzaddik is he was nifter, so you're assigning him a kayach, even though he's bula, he's nifter.
Right, but even the mason have that kayach. In other words, the neshama is still extant. And the neshama can plead our case before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we talk about, someone being a melech yosher. That's exactly what we mean. I mean, that's what the phrase means.
Like, if we go down to a cave and we ask the tzaddik, please help me, does that mean we want the tzaddik to help us, or do we want him to help?
Shouldn't say to the tzaddik, please help me. You should say to the tzaddik, you know, please intercede on our behalf, you know, with the Ribbono Shel Olam.
Wouldn't it be better to say,
right, so the truth is, the practice going back to the Vilna Gaon, you know, of certain strains in Litta was to never go to Klaros for that reason. The Soloveitchik family, the Beis Harav, they kemat never went to Klaros. You know, they didn't go on yard site, and you know they just didn't do any of that because of that reason. You know, Darash Al Amesim, you know, there shouldn't be any. Not that inherently going to a caver is a bad thing, but the lines start getting blurred. But again, you know, the minig in Klal Yisrael is that we do go to Kfaros. You know, and again, it's not a newfangled thing. It goes back to Kalav Ben Yefuna going to the Maris HaMachpelah, and we read about it in the Kinnis, you know, on Tisha B'Av. Yirmiyahu went to the Maris HaMachpelah. He woke up the Avos, you know, he beseeched them that they should ask God to somehow spare the Jewish people to avert the Churban. I mean, you know, that's all of that is a very solid part of our Masorah, you know, that's okay. Again, can it be abused and misused? Yeah, like many other things it can be, but fundamentally it's part of what we believe and part of our Masorah. So, you have these three different madrigas. The Azhara now comes to Nesiv with the tremendous Kiddush, which is really the crux of how he explains the Maisa Ha'ego. The Azhara is though, Od Lo Noda La Aron, whom he calls Shekin L'Kol Yisrael. Right? The Jews had received the Aseres HaDibros, where they were told, don't substitute another entity for God. You can't go to another entity and assume that they have the Koach. Right? But the prohibition of Lo Sa'asun Iti, in other words, you're allowed to beseech a Malach or another entity to be an intercessor to be a go-between between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You can ask a malach or a person to plead your case before God, but you're not allowed to make an image of that person, that malach, that whatever. In other words, the prohibition of Lo Sa'asun Iti, that had not yet been revealed to the Jewish people. It's at the end of Parshas Yisro. Right, so the way the Nesiv understands is that although it's at the end of Parshas Yisro, it was apparently taught to the Jewish people not immediately after Matan Torah, right? But the Jewish people only found out about that at some later point. And the truth is, you go back to the end of Parshas Yisro, that section, the last couple of psukim at the end of the parsha, are a separate section by themselves. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Kol Somar Bnei Yisrael Atem Reisem Kim Hashemayim Dibarti Imochem Lo Sasam Iti Lo Yechesev Lo Yizov. Right, that whole section, says the Nitziv, had not yet been conveyed to Aaron and certainly not to the rest of the Jewish people by the time the 40 days after Matan Torah were up. Right, if that's the case, so then V'nimsa, lo yodu bozeh ha'ofen shum iser. La sosa lo ezov. She evakshu mimeno, she yehei hu mavakash sarcha Yisrael mei Hashem. Mitam she'onu ha'mekabla en kochenu yofel amol lufnei Hashem b'tfila. So if that's the case, at this point in time, you can't blame the Jewish people or Aaron for making an image to help us focus our tfilos on Hashem. Because this image will help us ask of what's represented by this image, go before Hashem and present our tefillos before Him. At this point, the prohibition of Lo Sa'asun Iti Elohi Chesed Elohi Zov had not yet been taught to the Jewish people. Now the obvious next question is, okay, so then they didn't do anything wrong. Right? In other words, you did such a good job exonerating Aaron and the Jewish people, so then what was the problem? How can Moshe Rabbeinu have a taina on Aaron or the Jewish people for making the Egel Azov if they were violating a prohibition which had not yet been given to them? You know, they're not supposed to be Nevi'im. So let's keep reading in the Nitziv. He gives us a full sense of what's going on over here. Mikomakom od lo yodu mechakirizo. They didn't yet know this nuance. So therefore, Aaron felt comfortable telling them, make an egel, because as far as he was concerned, there was no isser involved in making an egel. And he wanted to convey to them what the egel would represent by using the following lashonos. Al kein omer lahem Aaron lefrok nizmei zahav, la'asos tsuro mei zahav, asher hu dugma le'emtsoi, shukarav la'hakadosh baruch hu yisbarach. That's why he wanted to make this image out of gold. Right? Aaron apparently was the one who came up with the idea that it should be out of gold. They just come to him and they say, we don't know what to do. So Aaron says, okay, go take the golden earrings. Why the golden earrings? Right? Because gold, of all the metals we see from the Mishkan, is the most precious. So by making a golden image, it would show that this is as close an image as we can fashion, you know, to approximate the idea of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'diyeg ba'oznei nesheichem b'neichem uvnoseichem. And that's why as well, says the Netziv, he says, break off the earrings in the ears of your wives, sons, and daughters. Now, we know that the men themselves were also wearing earrings, because in the end of the day, it's the men's earrings which come out of their ears, which make up the Egel Azov. So we also know what Chazal tell us about that. You know, the men go to their wives and say, honey, I'd like your earrings. They say, you got to be kidding, right? We're not giving you our earrings. So the men take their own earrings and they throw them, you know, into the cauldron and make it into an Egel Azov. Okay, so but from Aaron's perspective, why did he tell them to take their wives' earrings if they had earrings themselves? You know, it would have made more sense just to tell them to take their own earrings. Now again, Chazal tell us that Aaron was looking to stall over here, right? Because he figured that the women would never surrender their earrings. But again, the Nitziv is coming from a different perspective. You know, Aaron doesn't think that he's doing anything wrong by making this Egel Azov. The people don't think they're doing anything wrong by making the Egel Azov. So just pull off your own earrings. What's the big deal? No, he davka told them, your wives, your sons, and your daughters. Why? Because all of these people, says the Nitziv, are dependents. Right? The classic family model, it's the man who's the breadwinner. Right? The women, the children, are dependent upon the man. And therefore, kach derech hamon am, even though you really have to recognize that God will listen to anyone. The people want this image so that they can be dependent on something else. They want to be able to have the comfort that they feel scared to go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu themselves and present their case. They would prefer to have an intermediary go on their behalf. They want to be dependent on someone else. So Aaron says, okay, you want to be dependent on someone else, something else? That's fine. Let's symbolize that by taking the earrings of your dependents and using them to build this Egel HaZahav. Because that will drive home to you the idea that the Egel HaZahav itself is not what you're talking to. It's not what ultimately is going to grant your requests. You're being dependent on the Egel Azov and everything that it represents to be a melitz, to be an intermediary between yourselves and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? So even the way in which he asks them to make the Egel is indicative of what he sees the Egel as being, a substitute for Moshe Rabbeinu, essentially making the Egel Azov, according to Aaron's calculations, is just a graphic way of davening the tefillah of Machnisei Rachamim. Yeah.
Just having a hard time with something. First of all, anytime Hashem spoke to Klal Yisrael, he never ever said, "Atem Me'isim Kinyan Hashemayim V'Barakti Imachem." It's the only time that he says it, right?
Right.
So if he says it then in this, right? Because the Chura, I would say, it's connected to what just happened on Har Sinai.
Right.
The juxtaposition is so striking that Hashem, I made this whole spectacle at Har Sinai, and now, after reason, you saw that I spoke to the man. So I understand that it was that, like, it seems to be lost over that fact that that post is there.
So the question Rabbi Ruben wants to ask on the Nitziv is, it seems kind of schwer to say that that last parsha of Yisro was not told to the Jewish people immediately after Matan Torah. Sounds like you just saw, that happened right now. I think the way the Nitziv would learn it is as follows. Again, let's just go back to the end of Yisro. Vayamud ha'amei rachok. Right, Terek Chav Pasuk Yudches. The people stood aside. Moshe Nigash El Ha'arafel Asher Shom Ha'elokim. Moshe goes up to the cloud, to the darkness where God is to be found. And then immediately thereafter, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Kosol Maru Bnei Yisrael Temer Isam Kim Rashmai Dibati Machin Losasam Iti V'chule. So Moshe Rabbeinu gets this communication from God right then and there. But when does he actually convey it to the Jewish people? Right now, he's up in the Arafel on the top of Har Sinai. He ain't coming back down for another 40 days. So in other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, look, when you get back down, whenever I'm done learning with you, so tell the Jewish people that this idea, there's this idea called Elohei Ches, Lo Sasuniti Elohei Chesav Elohei Zov. You'll get to it in 40 days. There's no need to tell them right now. Now, of course, obviously there was a need to tell them right now. But, it was reasonable at that point in time for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, when you get back down, tell the Jewish people that there's this prohibition of making an intermediary form. Why doesn't he tell them right away before he goes? Why doesn't he tell them the whole Torah before he goes? I mean, he's going to come back down after the end of 40 days and start teaching Torah to the Jewish people. Mehecha Tesi, that he should have to teach them Dafka this halacha at this point in time.
So
he's not stalling. No, according to the Nitziv, Aaron is not stalling. One thing at a time, right? So Aaron wants to make an Egel Azov because it's mutter to make an Egel Azov as far as he's concerned. There's no problem making an Egel Azov. No, so by Yisparku Kolamis Nizme Azov Asher Biosneim Biavim Alarim. Right, so they take the golden earrings, they bring them to Aaron. Vayikach miyodom, vayotzar oso bacheret, vayaseyo egel masecha. So Aaron does something which, again, in his mind is totally mutter. He makes an egel azov, but then the problems start. Vayomru, they say, some people say, oh, Eilo Elohecha Yisrael Asher He'elucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. These are your Elohim Yisrael who took you out of Mitzrayim. In other words, this power, and again, I mean, obviously they don't think that this golden calf, which was just fashioned a few moments ago, literally took the Jews out of Mitzrayim. This golden calf represents a koach of shor, a certain power in the world known as the power of the ox, perhaps associated with Taurus, among the astrological signs. So, this power, they say, is the power that took us out of Mitzrayim, meaning when we left Mitzrayim, God gave over his power to some other entity, and that entity now has the power to do things on its own. The term for that is Avodah Zarah. So in other words, the Jewish people, who, again, Aaron makes this Egel Azov with the best of intentions to be an intermediary, which as far as he knows is not a problem. The people see this Egel And they begin to view the egel not simply as an intermediary, but as something that represents a power in its own right. They start seeing it as Avodah Zarah. At that point, Aaron realizes that something is amiss. Vayar Aaron. Aaron sees it. What do you mean he sees it? Right? He sees that the people are taking what he made, which as far as he's concerned is kosher v'yosha, and they're transforming it into an Avodah Zarah. So he hastens to try to stem the tide. Vayiven Mizbeach Lefanov, Vayikra Aaron Vayomar, Chag Liyud Kei Vav Kei Machar. Aaron builds a Mizbeach, and he says, no, let's celebrate Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei. This Egel is not God. This Egel is an intermediary to bring us to God. God is Yud Kei Vav Kei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's make a chag, let's make a party, a celebration, to celebrate Yud Kei Vav Kei. So the Nesiv writes, Vayikra Aaron, the Kol Godo Vachrozo B'machane, makes a big announcement. Sheyedu Asher Chag LaShem Mocher, Lo Kumo Shesobr Shakodesh Baruch Hu Kvar Mosai Lezeh Koach Hanagoso. Not like you think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over his power to some other entity. V'shuv ozav Hashem is ashkochoso mehem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is no longer watching over us. Lo kein, asher mochor nakriv korbonos lifnei Hashem, shi ashpia al yidei zekoach parnosa. Right? God, let's bring our korbonos to God to bring down the koach of parnosa. So why Taka didn't he make the chag right away? Probably just planning. You know, you want to make it, you want to maximize the number of people at this chag. You make a big deal out of it. We're going to have, you know, yeah, it takes time to plan a party for 2-3 million people. You know, it doesn't happen, I guess it happens overnight, but it doesn't happen right away. Right? So, but the idea is, he's not stalling. He wants to try to stem the tide, to get them to stop viewing this egel as Avodah Zarah, but to see it instead as a intermediary to Hashem, who, as far as he's concerned, is the way to do it. Now, says the Netziv, but I still have a kasha on Aaron. Uve emes hoyel Aaron bir osa shabo mizo hasura lemachshavos v'deyal zoros li tol es ho'egel ulevatlo l'shabro. At that point, where Aaron sees that the egel azov, even if it's, as far as he's concerned, the Egel Azov is totally mutter, but the Egel Azov has led to a terrible, terrible state of affairs where at least part of the people are viewing the Egel as Avodah Zarah. So at that point, why didn't Aaron destroy the Egel Azov? In other words, again, he thinks it's mutter. Fine, so we understand why he made it. But once he sees that a kilkul is coming out of the existence of the Egel Azov, why not destroy it? So the Siv says something fascinating and tremendous lesson we can learn from this. Says that Aaron makes a shikul. He sizes up the situation and says like this: what will happen if I destroy the egel? So a great number. So okay, a certain number of people are not going to do avodah zarah as a result, but perhaps a greater number of people will lose all faith and confidence in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because again, there's a growing sentiment among the people that we could only access HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Moshe Rabbeinu, and with Moshe Rabbeinu being gone, we can no longer connect to God, and a great number of people are going to be parik ol. They're going to throw off the yoke of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Plus, what also might happen if I destroy the egel, a certain group of people might kill me. Now that would be bad. Now, that would not just be bad for the obvious reason, right, that he's selfishly interested in his own life. But says Aaron, I have, you know, as long as I'm here, I can at least keep the people in check and minimize the number of people worshipping Avodah Zarah. If they kill me, and one of these Avodah Zaraniks gains the upper hand, so then the whole battle is lost. I could lose all of Klal Yisrael. this is a situation of triage. And Aaron basically decides, I want to be tolfes es harab b'miuto, to use the words of the Netziv, I want to choose the lesser of the two evils. The lesser of the two evils is to keep the egel extant, even though some people will fall into the trap of Avodah Zarah. By the way, not many. How many people are killed by the Levium? 3,000. So 3,000 out of 2-3 million is, relatively speaking, a small number. There's a mir to see it as Avodah Zarah, but the vast majority are going to be helped by this, by the presence of this Egel Azov, because it will help them connect to God in a way in which, if they don't have anything, they're going to totally be parik all. So Aaron makes a calculation that this is the lesser of two evils, and therefore I'm going to go with it. The afal gahav shiyoda shigam hu lo yinaker shigam l'kam anosh lovol avon avonazara. Even though Aaron knows that in the process, at a certain level, he's doing something wrong, because he's bringing about the Avodah Zarah of some of the Jewish people. He's facilitating some of the people to do Avodah Zarah. Mikol mokom mosar oso tzadik nafsho v'nishmaso b'shvil ahavas Yisrael. Aaron is a hero, says the Netziv, because Aaron makes a decision that he's going to sacrifice some of the people spiritually in order to preserve the rest of the people from a spiritual perspective. And even though Aaron knows that he himself will be held accountable for those 3,000 people who end up worshipping Avodah Zarah because of something that he facilitated, he'd rather lose out spiritually and preserve the rest of the Jewish people rather than just, you know, be a tzaddik himself and say, well, I'm going to destroy the Avodah Zarah, and have the Jew, you know, he'll be totally exonerated, but the Jewish people are going to go off the deep end from a spiritual perspective, because they'll be at a loss and they won't be able to connect to anything whatsoever. Aaron is a hero, the Netziv says. He sacrifices his ruchnius on behalf of the people. The nimsa shahaya Aaron b'maisa ego machis kaliyadas v'alzeh nenash b'misas nado v'aviyu. You know, Aaron is punished. His sons die because of his role in the Chet HaEgel. But, you know, when you look at what could have been, Aaron isn't punished as severely as we would think that someone who's, you know, facilitating Avodah Zarah himself would be punished, because we understand that he's choosing to allow a few people to be over at Avodah Zarah in order to save the masses. And he's punished for it. But he's willing to take on the punishment because he says, in allowing these few people to sin, I'm saving the klal as a whole. Right? Alzeh nenash b'misas nado v'aviyu. V'af al gav shekiv an aron l'shem shamayim mikol mokom nenash. He was mechavin l'shem shamayim, but he was punished nonetheless. Right? So that's our understanding of Aaron and his involvement over here with the Maase HaEgel, right? The Netziv earlier in Parshas Tetzaveh makes the following, you know, remarkable statement, a follow up to his idea that Aaron over here is a hero. He's not he's a tragic hero in a certain way, right? But he's a hero ultimately. Says the Netziv, if you look in Parshas Tetzaveh, when it describes how Aaron and his sons are appointed to be Kohanim, it seems, if you read the Pesukim carefully, again, they had blood put on their earlobes, on their big thumbs, on their big toes. So the way it seems to be presented in Tetzaveh is that the blood is first put on Aaron's earlobe, then the earlobes of his sons, then on Aaron's thumb, and then the thumbs of his sons, then on his big toe, and on the big toes of his sons. If you look later on, when the Torah actually describes in Parshas Tzav how the actual dedication ceremony took place, you know, making Aaron and his sons into Kohanim, the way the Torah seems to describe it over there is that Aaron had blood placed on his ear, thumb, and big toe first, and then Moshe moved on to the sons in succession. Again, each person was given all of the matanos all at once. What's the significance to that? So that minor change, says the Netziv, is a reward to Aaron, that he's given all the matnas domim all at once, to as in a sense to show the stature that he achieved through what? Through the story of the Egel Azov. Aaron HaKohen comes out of the story of the Egel Azov as a hero. Again, a hero who's punished, a hero who's held accountable, you know, for what he did, for the bad that he did, but a hero who ultimately sacrificed in order to save the clout. It's a fascinating read of what Aaron HaKohen is all about and the whole role of the Maaseh HaEg. I think the fact, so the Nesiv goes on later on to say that the fact that the people as a whole, in other words, Aaron may have been powerless to stop these 3,000, but if he would have had the people together with him, they could have stopped the 3,000. The people were mostly passive, even though the people were not Ovid Avodah Zarah, but they also didn't really take steps to correct the Ovid Avodah Zarah also. That's what V'yom Pokti Pokarati Aleim Chatosam. When you see part of Klal Yisrael sinning and you stand by, that's a terrible, terrible thing. That's mamash the lesson from the Maaseh HaEgel. Okay, well, wish everyone a good Shabbos. There's a lot more over here, but at least there's food for thought in understanding what Aaron, what the Maaseh HaEgel is all about, and gives us certainly a new perspective on what's going on over here. Okay, Rabbi Chaim ben Akasha Omer, Rav Tzach, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lezakos, Yisrael, Lefikach Hir B'lehem.